cases 1 to 5.
So what took place in the first?
5 verses.
Started
to
play the flute for the gopis
and Vrindavan
made perfect even better. Very good. What else happened?
There is a constant conversation between Vrindavan and Krishna himself. The Lord Gaudiya mentions, like, the boy beginning to mirror the first. Vrindavan continuously enhances his features so that it is more effective for Krishna. And Vrindavadevi and Puramasi are always trying to make Vrindavan, decorate Vrindavan to suit the mood of Krishna.
Any other points?
Only the gopis can extract the rasa from Krishna.
What's that?
Only the gopis. And
they can extract a special kind of rasa from Krishna, called Madhurya Rasa. Yeah. Anyone can extract rasa from Krishna, but they can extract more from Krishna. Anything else?
The pieces and
I don't want to hear any noise tonight. Any other points? Okay. Yeah.
I just have one question. When Krishna plays the flute and it's irresistible to the gopis, is it irresistible to everybody or just the gopis?
Everyone.
Anybody.
So we hear that when Krishna enters the forest, Vrindavan comes to life and reciprocates with him. Then we hear about the gopis beginning to speak to each other about Krishna's flute playing, and a description of Krishna's beauty is given. Now tonight, we'll further hear about the intimate discussions which take place between the gopis. So as we discussed last week, the main point which we have to meditate upon is that we're not qualified to hear this. We're not qualified to really hear anything, but particularly when you're dealing with Krishna's conjugal ras or the Madhurya ras, really to hear about this you have to be free from lust, you have to be free from kaam. And if you're not free from lust, really we don't have qualification to hear this. But because, as we discussed last week, this is a systematic study and it is categorical and we're going through it systematically, then now we arrive at the 10th canto. So we should, in a very humble state of mind, we should pray for qualification that one day we'll be qualified to hear these pastimes. So we should go forward very respectfully, very carefully. And as we said last week, we should hear these pastimes on our knees with our hands folded. And if we are in the humble state of mind, a correct state of mind, then Krishna and the gopis and the eternal associates of Vrindavan, they will sprinkle the dust of their feet upon our heads. And then we'll have some qualification to hear these pastimes. However, it does say at the end of the 33rd chapter of this canto, which we'll study next year by Krishna's mercy, it does say that hearing these pastimes is the remedy for lust within the heart of the conditioned soul. And Mother Jagatarini, she pointed out a number of years ago at Govardhan at one of the retreats, and I'll always remember that she said that. She said, actually, it is only by hearing these pastimes that the lust can be removed once and for all. So it doesn't mean that you don't have lust in the heart when we hear these pastimes, but if you hear them in the correct mood, then the lust will dissipate. That is the potency of these pastimes. But we should hear them very carefully, very respectfully.
Okay. So tonight we'll continue, verses 6 to 9.
O king, when the young ladies in Braj heard the sound of Krishna's flute, which captivates the minds of all living beings, they all embraced one another and began describing it. Janesh Prabhu.
The word vidhi here indicates that after becoming speechless by remembering Krishna, the covered dancers then regain their composure and were thus able to ecstatically describe the song of Krishna's flute. As the two gopis began to explain, and the other gopis realized that they shared the same ecstatic love within their hearts, all of them started embracing one another, overwhelmed with unbidden love.
So, any points there?
Yeah, I wasn't here last
class,
so I don't want to just discuss, but why is it that now the gopis are responding to Krishna's speech
at
this
stage? Well, it's their age. Now they've come to that age. Krishna's somewhere between Paugandha and Kaishora, and the gopis are also at that age. So now it's awakening. Really, it began around about the Kali Leela. That's when Krishna entered Paugandha. And that's when it describes in the Ananda Vrindavan Champu that Krishna and the gopis became attracted to each other at that time. Because Krishna's body is changing, his mind is changing. So because he's entering Kaishora Leela, then the gopis are also attracted to him in that way. So now it's all beginning to manifest like that. Yeah, the point.
Question. We know that, well, I think I've heard that the gopis become possessed with Krishna when he leaves to Dwaraka and they wanted to come back from the queens there. So why haven't they got any jealousy or possessiveness between each other?
The gopis?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, okay. They're embracing each other, so I was wondering.
Yeah, we'll explain that a little bit. Any other points?
Years older
than you. In age, yeah. So he'd be in Paugandha Leela. Well, it's going towards Kaishora Leela at this point in time. So.
Gopis are also representing that when you feel the love of Krishna, the love should be shared amongst themselves. Just being
There's different types of gopis. So there's the left-wing gopis, there's the right-wing gopis. And in these songs of the gopis, when the gopis are speaking here to each other in the Venu Gita, these are different groups of gopis. Because different groups have different moods. So generally speaking, there are two divisions. There's the right-wing gopi, there's the left-wing gopi. So left-wing gopi means Radha and her group, and the right-wing gopi means Chandravali and her group. So they're speaking very intimately. It describes that they come together in groups, and they're speaking very intimately together. So it's those who are like-minded are beginning to speak together. Now, the first point to note is that the Bhagavatam says in the very beginning, in the opening verses, that in order to understand the Bhagavatam, one must become near Matsara. Near Matsara means without envy. And because we have envy in our consciousness, and we all do, therefore we cannot understand Krishna's pastimes purely. Because Krishna's pastimes can only be relished or understood by those who are free from envy. And especially these pastimes, which are the most exalted pastimes of Krishna and his eternal associates, they can only be understood by those who are free from envy. So if there's envy in the consciousness, you can't understand these pastimes properly. So what is the qualification of the gopis? The gopis do not have envy. They're not envious of each other. It describes that they are embracing each other and they are sharing intimately their loving relationship with Krishna. Now, there are different groups. It's not that all the gopis will speak together. There are different groups of gopis who will speak to each other. So the left-wing gopis are together, the right-wing gopis are together, and even amongst the groups there are different moods and different gopis who are exchanging. But in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is written by Sanatana Goswami, and it is said to be a commentary on the Bhagavatam. And it is said to be spoken by Parikshit to his mother, Uttara, after the Bhagavatam is finished. 7 days he hears the Bhagavatam. He has a very short amount of time. He cannot repeat the entire thing, so he repeats the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is the essence of the Bhagavatam itself. So in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it mentions that that the right-wing gopis and the left-wing gopis, at one point in time, they come together to serve Krishna. So even though they have competition, because it feeds the love or the mood of prema or the mode of service between the gopis and Krishna, by having some competition, it increases that. And it makes the pastimes more nectarian, because all of this is parakeya bhava. So by having different camps, Krishna and Radha and Krishna and the gopis are already going through so many obstacles to meet each other. By having more different camps, then it just creates competition. It makes it all more interesting. It creates more rasa within the pastime. But in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it describes that when Krishna goes away at one point, all the gopis come together and they console each other. So there is no envy. Right? Radha is not envious of Chandravali. Chandravali is not envious of Radha. Actually, they're cousins. Right? And they don't dislike each other. But there's a natural mood of it, like described like a transcendental envy, which is there. But in order to understand these pastimes, we must become free from envy. If you have envy in the heart, you can't understand all these things. So the main thing we have to work on at our level is to free our hearts from envy, matsara. If you want to be better than another devotee, or you want to put yourself above another devotee, you don't want to serve another devotee, you can't understand these pastimes. And all of us are like that. We envy each other. Right? And because we're envious of each other, we can't understand these pastimes purely. So that is the qualification. We have to understand the adhikar to understand all of this. What is the adhikar to understand Krishna's eternal pastimes? Your heart must become cleansed of lust, of anger, of greed, of pride, of envy, of illusion. All of these defects must be removed. Then you can understand the pastimes. That's the adhikar. So it describes that when Krishna comes out, he has a flower behind one ear. So he comes out into the forest. And if the gopis are on the left, then he puts the flower on the left side. And if the gopis on the right, then he puts it on the right side. So as we study this section, the Acharyas made the comment on a number of occasions, he is intoxicated by his youth. You know when you're young? Just like Jai Krishna. Can I use you as an example? How old are you now? 15. Okay, it's perfect. Because Krishna is this age. Is your age. How old are you? 15 and what? How many months?
Probably 5 months.
Okay, 15. So Krishna's a touch older than him. So this is actual Krishna's age, like this. And you'll remember, you're like that. Nearly 16, right? So you become intoxicated by your youth. Right? You're like that at the moment. Right? Or you think all the girls in the school want to marry you and like that. Your dad tells me you say these things. So.
Oh, really?
That's okay, because we're very close friends, so he tells me these things. But...
And then you tell the rest of the class.
What's that?
And then you tell the rest of the class.
Yeah, just that. Just that. But to make amends, I was exactly the same as you when I was your age. You become intoxicated by your youth, because your body's so strong, you're so powerful, Krishna is so beautiful, he's intoxicated by himself. So as he goes out into the forest, he's a young boy and he's just enjoying, right? And it's all for him, right? So he feels like that. He's just like it says, like a mad elephant. Like if the elephant drinks too much honey or something, then just goes mad, right? And then just runs into the forest. And he's just intoxicated like that. So Krishna is like that. So as he goes into the forest, he puts the flower behind the ear. Right? If the gopis are over there, he puts the flower behind the ear. Right? And if they're on that side, then he puts the flower behind the ear. Like that. And he just wears it on one ear. It's just like sometimes you'll see when people are young, they wear one earring. You know, the boys have one earring. Normally you have two because it's, you know, balanced, symmetrical. Like that. But you'll see Balaram, it says Lord Balaram, just has one earring. Because when you're young, you want to be different. You want to be radical. So that's what they're like. So he just puts one ear, you know, just throws one flower behind the ear. So he's intoxicated by himself. And it says he wants to express his youth. He's young and his body's just full of energy. So he's just enjoying. That's why he's called the supreme enjoyer. His desire to enjoy is incredibly strong. It's the same as all of us. We all have, because we're created in Krishna's image, we have this same quality. We have unlimited desire for enjoyment. Now, it doesn't matter how much enjoyment we got, we want more. How many gulab jamuns can you eat? Now, you just keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going because you just so much desire is there to enjoy. In the material world, you cannot continue to do that because the body just falls apart. But in the spiritual world, it is unlimited how much enjoyment we can do. So it describes that he's wearing a Vajrayanti garland. And it says that the garland is made of at least five types of flowers, sometimes seven types of flowers. It describes sometimes there are more. So the garland goes all the way down to his ankles. And the five different types of flowers they put within the garland represents our five senses. Because Krishna captivates each one of our five senses. He's so beautiful that his devotees want to taste him, they want to touch him, they want to smell him, they want to see him, and they want to hear him. So he's flowers that completely captivate and intoxicate. So his garland is representing. It describes that he wears flower ornaments on each of his limbs. So he has anklets. He has wrist bands of flowers. Around there. And then he has tulsi. A little garland of tulsi like that. And then he wears tulsi garland, which goes all the way to his feet. Like you see in Vrindavan, Radha Shama Sundara, the way they dress. That is the way they dress Krishna in the spiritual world. And then he has a garland which goes all the way down to his feet. He wears anklets of flowers, also tulsi anklets. He has around his, especially when it's hot in the summer, sometimes he wears like a very, very short, you see Radha Raman in Vrindavan, the very small deity. So you'll see pictures on the internet. In summertime, he just wears like a, it's like shorts, but it's like a, like a short skirt made of garland. So Krishna, he wears around here, he wears like a sash of garland, of flowers. So the gopis make all flowers, and sometimes he just wears that. Sometimes he wears the flowers around, even when he has his dhoti on, but he wears like a belt of flowers. And then it says around his neck, he has like sometimes a necklace, short necklace of flowers, like that. Wrapped all the way through his turban. Sometimes they make like earrings of flowers, which he wears. He wears his main garlands of flowers, of tulsi and of the flowers, and he wears armlets here, you know, around the flowers. So it says that he wears at least five different types of flowers because he's captivating everyone's senses. So he dresses so beautifully. It says he is like a dramatic actor. Just like when an actor goes on the stage, someone who's dancing, someone who's singing, they dress very attractively and very, how would you describe it? elegantly, and just trying to think of the word. Opulently. What's
charming.
That?
Charming.
Yeah, charmingly. Yeah, very attractively. He dresses himself like that. Wears all of these different ornaments like that. He dresses so beautifully that it attracts all of the senses. It just intoxicates and captivates all of the senses. That's why he's known as Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. It completely captivates everyone. So that is the potency of Krishna's form. And it says that his form is so beautiful, it beautifies the ornaments. The ornaments beautify him, but ultimately he beautifies the ornaments. His form is so intoxicating that it just, in and of itself, it is enough to attract everyone. And then it says that he is the greatest of the dancers. It's mentioned in this verse, also in the ninth verse. When he goes into the forest, it describes at the moment he's with the cowherd boys. So the gopis are describing Krishna going into the forest with the cowherd boys. I was reading today, all the boys, they're all intoxicated. It's like a bunch of 15-year-old boys, you know, all together. It's like the soccer team. You know, they run out in the field, they're all completely intoxicated. So they're all like that. And they're all beautiful, and they're almost all as beautiful as Krishna. Sridharma, Ujjwala, Arjuna, Stoka Krishna, all of these principal cowherd boys. And they're all in the same mood. And I was reading today, as they go out into the forest, the boys, they start walking on their hands. You know when you do a handstand? You know when you're young? You can do it, right? Yeah, you can do a handstand, you can walk on your hands. Yeah, you've got to practice. So when you get on your hands, the boys are going in the forest, some of them are walking on their hands. And Krishna's laughing. Now he sees the boys are walking next to him on their hands. Because they're just intoxicated with their youth and they're enjoying. So the gopis are describing the cowherd boys and Krishna going out into the forest. Right? And they're completely absorbed in the mood of Krishna as a cowherd boy with his friends. It's so attractive
to all of the gopis.
So it says he is the greatest of dancers. So when he's going out, everyone is singing and dancing. It's like a festival. He's playing his flute, and as he plays his flute, he's calling the gopis. No? So with his flute, he is calling the gopis, and they're hearing their names being called by him. So he's playing the most attractive, and all the other boys begin to play their flutes, right? And boys begin to sing, and they dance. And when they get out into the forest, sometimes Krishna and Balaram, they go into the middle and the boys begin to clap their hands. And they clap in a very intricate way. Like that. And they're all clapping together, all the boys, right? And they're playing flutes and they're and they create like a musical concert. And then Krishna and Balaram go into the middle and they begin to dance together. Right? Intoxicating. And they're completely intoxicated. And they're dancing together. Well, then they do this year, and all the boys begin to dance around them. And the gopis have seen that, and they are describing this. So Krishna is a dancer. Right? He doesn't just walk, but wherever he goes, he's dancing. He's the most captivating. Every movement of Krishna is captivating. So he's said to be Nataraj, or Natavara. It's described here in this section of the Bhagavad Gita. So the gopis do not have a chance with Krishna. I was reading today, it says that when he glances at them, he shoots arrows into their heart. Just with his glance, he looks at them and just into their glance. And you have to understand that the culture at that time is that the women would not talk to men. It's not like that. It's not like these days where people mix. They would not talk. And they're very chaste, and everyone covers their hair. You know, the gopis cover their hair, and they even cover their faces. You just see their eyes. And they're resisting with all of their power. These are the most chaste girls in creation. With all of their power, they're trying to resist Krishna, but they cannot. Right? Because one glance, he looks at them, it completely disturbs their consciousness, and he captivates them. And they cannot get him out of their mind. So that is the potency of Krishna. He's all attractive. So it's describing here that he is the most beautiful dancer as he goes into the forest, and he's the most beautiful musician. So he's playing the flute, he's captivating the gopis, right? And they're envisioning him as he's going into the forest, what he looks like. It says that the entire way that Krishna dresses is for one reason. How does he dress himself, and why does he dress himself the way he does? What is his motivation? To attract the gopis. That is Krishna's motivation. That's why he dresses the way he dresses. So he's very conscientious. You know, just like 15-year-old boys and girls, they're very conscientious about how they dress. How long do you spend in front of the mirror?
5 seconds.
But when your hair, because your hair is short at the moment, so you just go like that. But when your hair is longer, right, then, you know, you're very particular. Right. You probably know when you're younger, you know, when you're 16, like that, right? Girls, they spend hours, right? And the boys, they spend hours, you know, looking at themselves. I remember when I was young, you know, and I had hair, you know, in the morning, you know, just like, you know, getting yourself ready, you know, doing the whole thing, because you're thinking as soon as you get to the train station to go to school, the girls are going to be there. Right, so you're always looking, and whenever the train goes past, you know, you look in the window, your reflection, you know, you just want to. That's what it's like. So we have to understand Krishna's mood, because he's that age, right? He's intoxicated at the moment. So his whole motivation is just to dress himself in such a way that the gopis are attracted to him. So this is, once again, we're dealing with something which is transcendental. And that's why it says we should not approach this with material consciousness. Because if you approach it with material consciousness, you just superimpose your consciousness onto it. Right? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if you're unqualified and you go towards this rasa with Krishna and the gopis, he said, if you're unqualified, you will be thrown back and all that you'll receive is virasa. Right? Which means you'll get the opposite. Right? Instead of your heart becoming cleansed, your heart becomes contaminated. And then lust will be evoked in your consciousness. So we have to be very careful. We're not qualified actually to be hearing this. But this is Krishna's pastime. So we have to hear it. If we hear it with the right consciousness, it will gradually purify us. But if you're not qualified, then it will have the opposite effect. So we have to be very, very careful about how we approach these pastimes.
But then it says, this will be described in the next few verses, that the gopis were transcendentally envious of the flute. Now, what is being described here, this is the highest level of bhakti. This is the highest level of devotion to Krishna. The gopis are so attracted to Krishna and intoxicated by Krishna that they're envious of his flute. And the acharyas point out, even though the flute is conscious because it's spiritual, but Krishna himself describes the flute as being dead. You know, so let's think of it in the material sense. We know it's not because it's conscious, but it's just a piece of bamboo or something. But the gopis, in their discussions, they're criticizing the flute. Why is the flute touching his lips? What right does the flute have? And we'll read in the later verses. They criticize the flute heavily. Now, this is mad. Now, this is called Unmada. Now, one of Radharani's names is Unmada Radha, which means Radha who has gone mad. You'll read in chapter 47 later on, in next year or the year after. Then she's speaking to the bumblebee. Brahma Gita. Right? There's a number of different Gitas in this 10th canto. Gopi Gita, the Venu Gita, Brahma Gita, and there's a few others as well in this canto. So we hear Radharani speaking to a bumblebee. or criticizing a bumblebee, or criticizing a flute. This is madness. This is the level of transcendental ecstasy. Where is it coming from? It's their attachment to Krishna. Yeah? They're so attached to Krishna that they see innate objects as being... they become envious of them. So they're criticizing Krishna's flute. Why is the flute with Krishna all the time? Why can't we be with Krishna all the time? They begin to criticize. These are high levels. It says the gopis love... If you study the levels of prema, because prema has different levels. So in prema, the different levels are... Does anyone remember the description? It goes up to anurag, and then bhav, and then mahabhav. We have man, we have sneha. I can't remember the exact order, but there's like seven levels or so within prema itself. Now... the gopis, their love begins on the level of anurag, which is the third highest level. So it goes from anurag to bhav to mahabhav. That's what where they their love for Krishna is situated. It's the highest level. So at the highest level, you begin to criticize animals. You begin to become envious of the bamboo flute. Just like the deer. In the morning, when Krishna is going to the forest in this pastime, the deer are running next to him. And the gopis criticize the deer. Why can they run next to him? We want to run next to him into the forest, but we can't run with him. Because if we run with him, everyone will criticize us. So they criticize the deer. Why they can do it. And then they criticize the husband of the deer. They say they can run with their husbands. We can't run with our husbands. If we run into the forest, our husbands will beat us. For running with Krishna. Not that. But they can run with their husbands and still be with Krishna. So that they start going mad, right? Out of attachment for Krishna. And this is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to experience. The madness or the love, the intensity that the gopis, particularly Radharani, has in her relationship with Krishna. These are the most exalted topics. That's the most exalted topic. You have to meditate very deeply to understand these things. But we should meditate very deeply. And we should try to understand something. Sometimes devotees say, this is too exalted, I can't understand it. Okay, so then go back to your whatever level of spiritual advancement you're on and stay there. But if you want to understand these things, you have to meditate very deeply and try to understand. We can't fully understand it because it's the topmost levels of devotional service. But we should try to understand something of it. And by understanding something, it will lift us up very quickly to a higher level. Right? They have attachment to Krishna, the gopis. We should begin to feel some attachment to Krishna. Don't worry about feeling madness. That will come by itself. But at least feel some attachment to Krishna. Right? Because you can't artificially imitate these things. You can't pretend, oh, now I will do. Huh? Prabhupada said, you can't artificially cry. Tears will come naturally, but you can't artificially do it. But tears should come for Krishna. Giriraj Maharaj, he wrote to Prabhupada when Prabhupada was on the planet. And Giriraj Maharaj said to Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, sometimes when I'm in the arti, and sometimes when I see the deities, tears come to my eyes. And Prabhupada wrote back, and Prabhupada said, this is wanted. This is the actual sign that Krishna consciousness is coming. We should feel moved when we chant the holy name, when we hear these pastimes, when we see the deities, when we go to the holy dharm, when you associate with advanced devotees. Right? Something should happen in the consciousness. So it cannot be artificially imposed, but it must come naturally. So... it describes that the flute invokes karma within the gopis. It is called Kama Nuga Bhakti. Or actually, the gopis' love is called Kama Atmika. Their body is full of kama. Kama means desire to unite with Krishna. Now, it is interesting because the desire is not self-motivated. That is the difference between kama on the transcendental platform and calm on the material platform. Calm means lust. So the lust they experience, we call it calm, it is not the same as what we find in the material world, because the motivation is completely different. It says that Radharani, she becomes jealous. She has man. Man means she becomes angry, proud, angry, jealous, envious, when Krishna is with another gopi. But in the Prema Samput by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, it is described that Srimati Radharani, when Krishna is with another gopi, because we'll hear later on that Krishna sometimes is with other gopis, and she becomes jealous and angry, and she goes into man, which means jealous anger towards Krishna. She's not doing that for herself, but she is thinking, I can please Krishna more than them. I'm the most qualified gopi. I have the most love for Krishna, and I can serve him like no other gopi can serve him and give him more pleasure than any other gopi. I know that. Everyone else knows that. He knows that. So why is he wasting his time with these others? So then when Krishna comes to her and she knows that he has been with someone else, she's not envious of them or jealous of them, but she's just in that anger. She's thinking, why do you not come to me? Why do you not let me serve you? Why will you not associate with me? So it is completely selfless. It is an unselfish motivation. So the gopis are like this. They have calm for Krishna. They hear the flute. They just want to serve him and please him, as a young girl wants to please a young boy. But it is not motivated by lust. It is transcendental. It is prema. So this must be understood. If we don't understand this, we can't understand. So the entire Bhagavad Gita is leading to this point. Basically to these chapters. This is what the entire Bhagavad Gita, that's what all our study so far has been about. To get to this point. To understand this singular point. That we're meant to become free from desire. Any desire except to serve and please Krishna. And that is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. That's why they're the most exalted devotees. Because they only live to serve Krishna. Krishna's happiness is their end-all and be-all. In the material world, we just want to serve ourselves. And as devotees, we're still very self-motivated. Our service is still... If you look at our service, each one of us individually, if you examine yourself, you will see that our service is very much self-motivated. Right? Therefore, we can't understand all of these things. So... It describes that the sound of Krishna's flute is Ananda Vardhaka. What does that mean? Ananda Vardhaka. What does it mean? Yeah, it increases the bliss. So the sound of Krishna's flute, it increases the bliss. Prabhupada describes in the Anchalila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the sound of Krishna's flute. Yeah. It comes into this world when Krishna plays his flute in Goloka Vrindavan and enters this world as the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra gives unlimited bliss. In the spiritual world, Krishna's flute, it gives unlimited bliss to the devotees. When they hear his flute, they become... It means like bliss erupts from their consciousness. They become overwhelmed with bliss and love and happiness. And when you hear the Maha Mantra, if you hear it properly, you'll also get that experience. And then by hearing the Maha Mantra properly, one day you will hear Krishna's flute. That is the goal of our chanting. The goal of the chanting is one day you will hear the flute of Krishna. The flute is full of unlimited transcendental bliss. It captivates the heart. Just like I was driving up here before from the farm, and then I was listening to a lecture by Satchinandan Swami 2010 at the Govardhan Retreat. And when Maharaj speaks, sometimes he puts on, in the background, he puts the sound of the flute. very deep, very beautiful. And because we're about to speak on Bhagavad Gita, then I was meditating on the sound of Krishna's flute. And it's intoxicating. It enters into the heart, into the consciousness, and it captures the heart and it pulls the devotees. And you'll see later in the Bhagavatam, in another, next year, hopefully we'll study that, when Krishna plays his flute, it goes into the hearts of the gopis and it pulls them to him in the middle of the night. It pulls them out of there. And it says when they run into the forest, they don't even know where they're going. I was meditating on this down at our farm at night time when it's dark. Imagine you could just hear a flute in the distance and you just run into the forest in the dark. You don't know what's there, you don't know where you're going. They don't even know where they're going necessarily. They're just following somewhere that's sound of the flute. And as they're running in the spiritual world, every night the moon is full. It's Purnima, forever and ever and ever, eternally in the spiritual world. So the rays of the moon are coming through the shadows in the trees, and as they run through the forest, they're all running, because when Krishna hears his flute, Lalita hears Lalita. Lalita. And Vishakha hears Vishakha. Vishakha. And Radha hears Radha. Radha. So when Krishna's playing his flute, they're all hearing. And as they all begin to run into the forest, they're all running, 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 and they start looking around, they see. There's other gopis running as well. And as they get closer, they realize there's hundreds of them. And they're all running. And then they all get there. And we'll hear about that later on when they get there. Next year. When they get there, and they come in front of him, and then he says, he looks and he says, "Why did you all come?" He said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "You've left your homes. It's dangerous out here. It's not appropriate for you to be here." Right? And they become angry. And they all look at the ground, right? And the tears actually start flowing from their eyes. And then they put their toes on the ground, they begin to draw on the ground in the dust of Vrindavan with their toes. And they won't look at him, they're angry. Right? And then after some time, he says, "I'm just joking." He said, "You can come. We can dance." So this is the mood of the gopis they run into. So he attracts them. Right? And they experience calm, desire to be with him. But it's not material, it's not mundane. So it's not an easy thing to understand. But we have to purify our hearts so one day we can understand Krishna's love for the gopis and the gopis' love for Krishna. It is love, it is not calm. But it is called calm. And what's in this world looks like that. That's called Adi Ras. It describes in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That is Adi Ras. That's the original thing. What's in this world is just the contaminated version. And we have to be very careful of the thing in this world. The thing in this world, you want to keep yourself away from it. Krishna says in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, keep all abominable activities far away by devotional service. Just keep yourself away from it. In the spiritual world, you want to come as close as you can to it. But first, you have to become qualified to approach it. But just reduce it in the material world. It's very difficult because the material, it's everywhere now. It's everywhere. Ajamil, he walked and he saw the prostitute and the sudra embracing in the ditch. And his conscience got so contaminated that then he went and found the prostitute and he fell down and ruined his whole life. Prabhupada said, "What he saw once, we see every day." It's everywhere. Like that. So you have to keep yourself distant. Come and live at the farm with me in the forest. And then you don't see it.
So, in this verse, what is the last word in the verse?
Sorry, I made a mistake. What is the last word in the first line? Rajan. So Shukadeva Goswami is speaking, and then he says to Maharaj Pariksit, he says, Iti Venu Ravam Rajan. He says, Rajan. Because as soon as he begins to speak about the gopis, because Shukadeva Goswami is Srimati Radharani's parrot. And now that he's beginning to speak about the gopis directly for the first time in the Bhagavatam, when he begins to speak about the gopis, he becomes ecstatic. So ecstatic that he thinks, I can't speak anymore. And if he can't speak anymore, then that's it. We don't hear all the rest. So then he says, Rajan, King. He's becoming ecstatic. So he says, King. So just to control himself, he says, King. Just for a moment, he just breaks away from the like the pastime. He says, oh, King. And then he goes back and he speaks again. He's becoming so ecstatic he can hardly even speak. He can hardly even control himself. The acharyas made this comment.
Anyone has any points?
It says at this point, in this verse, Shukadeva Goswami becomes so ecstatic, it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but it says he becomes so ecstatic, he stands up, and he gets off the Vyasasan, and he goes and he grabs Maharaj Pariksit, and he embraces him. Right? And they begin to embrace each other, and all the sages are there, because there's so much ecstasy. And then after some time, they calm each other down, and then he goes and sits down again.
It's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam. It's not, and Goswami says that that's what happens in this verse. He stands up and so ecstatic. You mean, sometimes you imagine someone like, you know, Jayapataka Swami just stands up and just so ecstatic from what's taking place.
So, any points? Yeah.
Perfect artist.
Krishna associates with all the Vrindavan devotees to give them the spiritual bodies so that they can attain the spiritual kingdom. So in order to give them the spiritual body, he tries to make them attached to him. In order to give them mukti.
Yeah.
And it's claim of bhakti, no? It's a bhakti, kind of a bhakti.
You had a point?
When you're a mother, and your baby's young, I know when I used to leave my child with my mother-in-law, who was very capable of taking care of my son or my daughter, and I'd go to work, but I'd feel angry because I was the best for my son or daughter. Even though she was very good, I was better because I'm the mother. So I was just thought that's a possible beginning to start understanding that concept of not anger because of jealousy or self-motivated anger, but because I am better for my son or my daughter. So it might just be something that we can experience as mothers.
As a physician.
Hmm. Yeah, Radharani has that mood. She goes to that mood that I am the best for Krishna. Not that she thinks she's superior to others, she just thinks, I am the best for Krishna. Sometimes she comes angry like that. Why is he with everyone else? I will serve him better.
At the same time, we don't hear Darshan Tirarani sends other gopis towards Krishna and she goes back, showing her selflessness and showing the compassion to other gopis.
Yeah, it says, and when she chastises him, and she says, you know, why weren't you there for those gopis? Everyone was waiting for you. Where were you? They're all waiting. So she chastises on their behalf. Then sometimes she goes in her own mood. Right? I am your queen. Where are you? Like that. She's just... Yeah. Okay, we'll keep going. Text 7.
The cowherd girl said, "O friends, those eyes that see the beautiful faces of the sons of Maharaj Nanda are certainly fortunate, as these two sons enter the forest. Surrounded by their friends driving the cows before them, they hold their flutes to their mouths and glance lovingly upon the residents of Vrindavan. For those who have eyes, we think there is no greater object of vision." So when you become attracted to Krishna,
in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, chapter 18, which describes, what does chapter 18 describe? Very good. Bhava Bhakti, very good. And it describes there are 9 qualities of bhava. And one of the qualities is that Brinda will go and sit down. Brinda, sit down. So, one of the 9 qualities of bhava bhakti, which means exalted devotional service, means one of the qualities is virakti. So virakti means complete detachment from the material world. The gopis, they have complete detachment from the material world. Now, who wants to become completely detached from this material world? Right? We all do, right? But the only way you can become completely detached from the material world, you have to become completely attached to Krishna. So they show complete indifference to anything in this material world. And you see, Prabhupada was like that. Don't whisper. Okay, whoever's making the noises, don't make the noise. You see, Srila Prabhupada, right? He was completely detached from the material energy. Right? And he said, in Los Angeles, he said, "You think I'm in Los Angeles, but actually I'm in Vrindavan." So it means if you want to become actually detached from this material world in your consciousness, you have to live in Vrindavan. You have to be with Krishna all of the time. And when you're with Krishna all of the time, you lose your attachment to the material energy. So that is, that Krishna says in the Gita, param drishtva nivartate. You only become detached from the material world when you become attached to something better, which means life in Vrindavan. And actually, if you study chapter 15 and 16 of the Nectar of Devotion, which is Raghunuga Bhakti, it says that one of the principles of Raghunuga Bhakti is that you're always contemplating life in Vrindavan. So we're meant to absorb ourselves in these pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, Krishna with the cowherd boys, Krishna with the cows in Vrindavan. That is meant to be our goal.
So, the gopis are describing that Krishna is the supreme fruit for the eyes. If you see the Sanskrit says, they say that seeing Krishna is the ultimate goal for the eyes, or the ultimate, how do they say it? How does it get translated as? It is like there's no greater object of vision.
So in other words, to see Krishna, there is no greater object of vision. Krishna's form is the complete, the epitome, or like the highest level of pleasure for the eyes. The way Krishna dresses himself is so attractive that the gopis become overwhelmed and they think there's nothing else to be seen. We also need to cultivate this type of attachment. When you see the deities, quite often we see the deities in a very mechanical way and a very, very superficial way. But actually we should be overwhelmed with attraction to the deity of Krishna, especially in this temple, because we're very fortunate in this temple. We have the most beautiful deities in the entire universe. Right, there's no Srimati Radharani more beautiful than here in Melbourne. And Balabha is exquisite. You know, the only deities I find, I could say, more attractive, because these are my favorite deities, and they're everywhere. Kavi Chandramaras came here a few years back. And when he saw Radha Balabha, he said, "These could be your favorite deities."
just seeing them once. He said, they're your favorite deities. You just see them once. There's no deities more beautiful. I've met devotees overseas in Vrindavan, and they've seen pictures of Radharani. So I just want to come to Melbourne just to see Radharani. The only deities I find more attractive would be Radha Madhava in Mayapur and Radha Shamasundara in Vrindavan themselves. But that's only because they're there in that place. But these deities, they're the most beautiful deities. Now, how do you become attracted to Krishna? Because the gopis, their eyes are completely captivated by Krishna. The secret is, as Mother Jagatarini has taught us, you have to look at the deity for a long time. The problem is the devotees don't spend enough time with the deities. And especially here in Melbourne, we're foolish if you don't spend time with the deities. You know, I mean, we live right here at the temple. We just come and we see them for a couple of minutes and we go out. The main reason we go in there is just to get the charanamrita. Because it tastes good. And then we go upstairs, because that's where really why we came. Because it's all free. No, and it tastes good. You know, that's our main motivation. But the actual reason we should be here, and we should just chant our rounds, especially if you're brahmachari or brahmacharini. You're foolish if you don't go and spend time chanting your rounds with the deities. And all the devotees should do. It means chant, right? Nama, rupa, guna, lila. Right? So the nam is non-different from the form. When you're chanting, you meditate on the form of Krishna. When I chanted my rounds with my Guru Maharaj 6 months before he left this world, it was just him and I together in his little bhajan kutia, and he had a picture of Radha Shamasundari. He'd put it right in front of him and he'd just chant, and just half of his rounds, he'd just chant looking at the picture of Radha Shamasundari, meditating that the name and the form are non-different. So the gopis are like this. They're just meditating on the form of Krishna. You have to become attached to Krishna's form. His nam, his guna, sorry, his nama, his rupa, his guna, his lila. We have to become attached, obsessed, completely absorbed in. Prabhupada says with rapt attention.
So, how do we follow in the footsteps? Because the whole process of bhakti is to follow in the footsteps of
the residents of Vrindavan. It's called Rag Anuga Bhakti. We're meant to be practicing Rag Anuga Bhakti. What does that mean? It means you have to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. Now, how do we do that? Right. Prabhupada says you have to hear about them. That's what we're doing right now. This is Rag Anuga Bhakti. Whether or not we're on the level that we're actually appreciating that. But we should be absorbed in their mood. What is their mood while they're speaking about Krishna? Right? We're meant to be following the footsteps of the gopis. Lord Chaitanya says, Gopi Bhatu Pada Kamalayo Dasa Dasa Anudasa. He says it himself. We're all meant to be in that mood. Right? Following the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. Now, to follow in their mood means you have to understand their mood. You read their words, you understand their mood, and you try to absorb yourself in that mood of bhakti. So that is the whole process of studying the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. The acharyas point out this is called samadhi. Samadhi is the goal of Krishna consciousness. Right? Samadhi means complete fixation on Krishna. Krishna's lila, his pastimes, his nama, his rupa, his guna, his lila. Right? So we're meant to become completely absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. So this is samadhi. This is what this description is for. So that we can just become absorbed in hearing about Krishna. Without deviation, without our mind going to other places. Just become absorbed. When you become absorbed, you don't want to hear about other things. You lose your attachment to the material world. Now, very interesting, because the acharyas point out the gopis gave up four things, which are very difficult to give up in this world. First thing is kula. Kula means family. Hard to give up attachment to family. But the gopis gave that up. Right? In their conversations they're having with each other, in between these verses, they're all saying to each other, just let's go. Let's just go to the forest. He's there, let's just go. And one says, well, what will your family say?
And they say, well, let's not come back, and then we don't have to worry about the family. You only have to worry about the family if you come back out of the forest. Right? If you come home again. Let's just go and live in the forest, and he'll come out every day, and we'll just meet him there. Right? But then they can't do it because it's Vedic culture. You can't just leave the family like that. So they're trapped. They want to go, but they can't. Right? But the feeling in our hearts should be that we become detached from our family. Or at least we see the family as devotees.
Then they give up attachment to Dharma. Dharma means what you should do. The right path of action. They even give that up, and that's very difficult to give up. They just run off, and they say, we'll be criticized. When we're married to other people, and now we're running out to be with him, right? We'll be criticized. And they say, well, that doesn't matter. We'll just, at least we're with him. We'll deal with all that later. So they reject everything for Krishna. And this is the test. All of us, one day, we have to reject everything for. You have to give up all your attachments. Even Northrop. Everything you have to become detached from.
In due course of time.
Right? They also give up their shyness. Right? Because the gopis, they're very shy. Right? So, and one of the gopis, actually, I was reading today, one of the gopis says to the other gopi, she says, okay, we run out into the forest to be with him, but once we get there, we'll be too shy because now we're with him. We won't know what to say because they're young girls. You know, young boys and young girls. You want to be with boys and girls, but when you're with each other, everyone starts going like that. You know, you become all shy. So they overcome their shyness. And they say, when we're with him, it'll all become natural. We're like his wives. We just want to serve him and love him. Mm-hmm.
And then, the final thing they give up is fear. Because you're running into the forest. You don't know what's in the forest. And Krishna says that later on when they come into the forest in the middle of the night, he says, what are you doing here? So there's tigers here, there's snakes here. You know, you've all just come out here. It's not safe here. So what are you doing? Go back. So they even got fear for Krishna. That's what sannyas is. Sannyas means abhay charanara vinda. Prabhupada was fearless. Right? That's what sannyas means. That's why Bhakti Charuswami, he was giving a lecture here in Melbourne one time. He doesn't come to Melbourne very often, but he said, actually, sannyas is entering the mood of the gopis. He said that. That's what it means to become a sannyasi. He said, in our tradition, to become a sannyasi means to enter the mood of the gopis. It means you give up everything for Krishna. That's what a sannyasi is. And the gopis are the topmost sannyasis.
Okay.
See, the problem is, there's so much in these verses. So much in the verses. But we'll read two more verses. Dressed in a charming variety of garments upon which their garlands rest and decorating themselves with peacock feathers, lotuses, lilies, newly grown mango sprouts and clusters of flower buds, Krishna and Balaram shine forth magnificently among the assembly of cowherd boys. They look just like the best of dancers appearing on a dramatic stage, and sometimes they sing. So the acharyas point out they're meditating on Krishna in their heart. They can't see Krishna. He's gone to the forest. They're stuck in the village. They can hear his flute. And what they're describing here is what they're seeing in their mind. Right? It is like manasa puja. So we all have to learn to do this. We all have to learn to meditate on Krishna in our heart, our mind. And when you become advanced in your chanting, that's what you do. You're chanting the holy name, but in your heart you're meditating on Krishna's guna, rupa, lila, dharma. All these things are being meditated upon. That's how the gopis are meditating. They can't see him, but in their hearts they can completely experience him. Okay, final verse. My dear gopis, what auspicious activities must the flute have performed to enjoy the nectar of Krishna's lips
independently and leave only a taste for us gopis, for whom that nectar is actually meant. The forefathers of the flute, the bamboo trees, shed tears of pleasure. His mother, the river, on whose bank the bamboo was born, feels jubilant, and therefore her blooming lotus flowers are standing like hairs on her body.
So the acharyas point out this is called Sanchari Bhav. What are the gopis feeling?
They're feeling different emotions. And these different emotions, which they're feeling in this particular verse, are envy, bewilderment, pride, and humility. They're envious of the flute. As we've discussed, this is their madness. They become envious that they're actually angry at the flute. Right? They're criticizing the flute. Who's this flute? Touching his lips. His lips are meant for us. Right? So they're envious of the flute. They become proud. We are the gopis. Right? This is their transcendental ecstasy. And they become bewildered. Huh? How is the flute is experiencing all of this? And then finally they become humble, because then they think, but we're not with Krishna. The flute is with Krishna. The flute must be more qualified than us. And they offer prayers to Krishna's flute. This is madness. This is high levels of ecstasy. So they're showing the perfection of devotional service. So absorbed in Krishna, all of these things are experienced by them. This is called Mahabhav. These are the highest levels of love for Krishna. So this is what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was experiencing in the Gambira, in his pastimes in the room in Jagannath Puri. Right? He was experiencing the deepest, all of these ecstasies. And Ramananda Roy and Swarup Damodar would quote verses, this particular verse, they would quote this particular verse to Lord Chaitanya when he was in the Gambira. So this is the highest level of Mahabhav. Lord Chaitanya was relishing this verse, the meaning of the verse. And Lord Chaitanya is experiencing the mood of Radharani, how she feels when Radharani sees the flute with Krishna. Now, what is the speciality of the flute? The flute is touching Krishna's lips, and Krishna's lips are the source of all sweetness. Right? And what is the way that we experience the sweetness of Krishna's lips? Prasad. Right? Because why does prasad taste like it tastes? Lord Chaitanya says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is just sugar and milk and spices. And you mix them all together, anyone can do it. But there's no taste. But when Krishna tastes it, it becomes inexplicably nectarian. So every time we take prasad, and you see when Prabhupada, when you take prasad, he would relish it. Whenever you take prasad, you're relishing the taste of Krishna's lips. That's how the gopis feel every time they take prasad. Like if you go to India, you go to Radha Govinda Mandir in Jaipur, for example. Prasad means this much. You get a morsel. This thing we do in Melbourne is not... That's why we're all so dull to the experience. Because prasad for us just means like, you know, five plates. You know, that's prasad. But there, if you go to India... I remember one time I was in Vrindavan. Because, you know, in ISKCON we get so much. You know, garland. So I got a garland from the deities in Vrindavan. But then I was walking back and I took the garland off. And I put it somewhere, like for one of the cows to eat or something. And one Baba, he was walking down the road and he saw me and he ran up and he grabbed the garland and put it on his neck. So for him to get the garland of Krishna, and I could see how attached he was. For me, it's like I get garlands all the time. I live on Mahaprasad. So I don't relish the... But for the gopis, they just get one morsel from Krishna's lips, they relish it. Or they get the betel nut, which Krishna chewed, they relish it. Right? So that's why they're so attached, because they think the nectar from his lips. And his flute, when he plays the flute is getting the nectar from his lips all day long. But that belongs to us. They go mad. So Lord Chaitanya was relishing this verse in the Gambhira. This is the highest level of Mahabhava. So tomorrow night we'll continue. Hopefully we'll do a few verses tomorrow night. We only did four tonight. Tomorrow night, tomorrow we'll either finish the chapter or we'll do it in five verses and then five more verses. Another 10 verses. Like that. We'll just have to see. Shri Prabhupada ki.